the parable of the talents, Matthew 25:13-30, by Robert C. Newman. Jesus' parable, Matthew 25:13-30, of servants entrusted with substantial sums of money, is here unpacked. The parable of talents, as told by Jesus, has been very influential among Christians. In fact, the English word talent is derived from the interpretation of this parable. The standard usage of the word in English today is something like this: the natural endowments of a person, a special, often creative or artistic aptitude, general intelligence or mental power, ability. Let's take a look at the parable. We'll need three panels here to get the whole parable in. Starting in Matthew 25:13 NIV. Therefore, says Jesus, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. He's referring to his second coming. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid, went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Well, that's the parable. Let's think about the story it tells, and then we'll come back and see if we can figure out the interpretation of the story. This is a typical parable of Jesus, which is basically an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, an illustrative story that works by analogy. Here's the story. We start out with a slave owner going on a journey and entrusting his property to his slaves. Varied amounts are given according to their abilities. He gives 5 talents to one of them, 2 talents to another, 1 talent to another. A talent is a substantial unit of weight used in the Greco-Roman world, weighed about 60 pounds, some examples even running up around 75. When it's referring to money, it normally means 60 pounds of silver rather than of gold, unless specified, which is quite a substantial sum of money. What's the value of a talent? Well, this is tricky to calculate due to the large changes that have taken place in society due to industrialization. We can calculate the bullion value of a talent, that is, what that amount of silver is worth today. We can calculate the wage value of the talent, how many days' work that would represent for, say, a common laborer. And we can also calculate the purchasing power of the talent. Well, this purchasing power typically falls between the other two, so we'll just do the two. 60 pounds of silver, treating those as valuable money, and so weighed in troy method, that's 720 troy ounces of silver, 12 ounces to the pound. And as of today, the 3rd of May 2011, silver sells at $41.64 an ounce. So the bullion value of a talent of silver is 720 times 4161, which is $29,959.20, or about $30,000. A talent in ancient coinage was worth 6,000 drachmas, or 6,000 denarii, drachma the Greek coinage, and denarius the Roman coinage. So 6,000 days' wages for day labor. Well, as of today, the U.S. federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour, so $58 per eight-hour day. Probably most of the day laborers work more than 8 hours, but we'll work with that. So the wage value of a talent is 6,000 times $58, $348,000. So I see a range of over a factor of 10 between the two, but they're both big amounts of money. So even the fellow who was only entrusted with one talent was entrusted with a great deal of value, and the fellow entrusted with five, a great deal more. The slave's activity. Immediately after the owner departs, the first two begin to trade with the money entrusted to them. The third buries his money, whether the reasons he gives to the owner, slave owner or the master later on are the real reasons or not, it's hard to say. The reckoning. After a long time, the master returns. He calls his slaves in to settle accounts. The first two have doubled their money, though they had quite different amounts. They are praised equally and rewarded about equally, except we see in verse 28 that the one who has turned the five talents into ten is also given the talent that the fellow who hid his had. So he winds up with one talent extra besides the other rewards he receives. Both, the first two, are also given much greater responsibilities. The third slave, who had buried the money entrusted to him, seeks to excuse himself by condemning his master. He's shown to be self-condemned, however, by his own actions, that if he was afraid, he should have at least realized that if his master is like what he claimed he is like, of wanting to get something for nothing, so to speak, that he would do the safest thing, which is really to entrust the money to bankers, which would be even safer than digging a hole in the ground, and would get back interest. So he's shown to be self-condemned by his own actions. He loses his talent and is thrown into the traditional translation, the utter darkness. Well, that's the story. Interpreting the parable, think about the context. The surrounding passages in Matthew are about Jesus coming back again, what we call the second coming of Jesus. Chapter 24, verses 29 through 31, narrate for us the return of Jesus. 24:32 to 44 gives us a parable regarding the signs of the end called the parable of fig tree. Verses 45 to 51 give us the picture of the faithful and unfaithful slaves, those who are faithfully working when Jesus returns and those who are not, and a picture basically, I think, of Jesus returning sooner than some people expect him to. In chapter 25, verses 1 through 12, we have the parable of the wise and foolish bridesmaids. And here part of the point seems to be that Jesus may return later than some other people think he's going to, and they aren't prepared for the long haul, if you like. And then in 25, 13, 30 is our parable. And then in the rest of 25, verses 31 to 46, is the sheep and goat judgment, a picture of the judgment when Christ returns, I think probably the last judgment, and reference there to separating the people faithful from the unfaithful ones, like a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. So the surrounding passages in Matthew are about Jesus coming again. That's our context. And then the parables from 24:45 on are about faithfulness of some sort, the faithful and unfaithful slaves, the wise and foolish bridesmaids, our parable, and the sheep and goat judgment. Our parable in the two before it, faithful and unfaithful slaves, wise and foolish bridesmaids, seem to involve those who claim to be believers, and then the sheep and goat judgment seems to involve both those who do and don't claim to be believers. Well, we've got here this earthly story with a heavenly meaning. How do we unpack that? Well, it's fairly clear that the slave owner who entrusts things to his slaves and then goes away and returns is representing then Jesus, who is going away but leaving his disciples with responsibilities while he's gone. So that's the slave owner represents Christ, if you like. The slaves represent, I hear say, those who claim to serve him. So professing followers of Jesus, we might say. The money, large amounts of money, represents the abilities that Jesus gives to his followers to serve him with. Okay? And perhaps there's a hint there already that these are substantial abilities, or substantial might be other things besides ability, might be wealth, might be time, opportunities, etc. as well. The question of the bankers, when the master rebukes the slave who had just hidden the money, is a little more difficult question, but probably would represent some indirect low-risk service, that the others trading with the money, there's a chance you could lose all the money. Okay? It's a higher risk, if you like. You make a mistake, or even not making a mistake, just something goes wrong with the market at a particular point. So entrusting it to the bankers probably wrecks some indirect low-risk service of some sort. The lazy slave seems to be unsaved, judging from the terminology of his punishment, being thrown into outer darkness, as the traditional translation goes. Shows up in several other Jesus parables, and the weeping and gnashing of teeth shows up in other parables as well, or even in some more literal statements, and they seem to indicate the judgment that comes on unbelievers at Jesus' return. Well, we then try to draw some lessons from what Jesus is teaching us here in this parable. First is this: our Lord Jesus has given each person who professes to be his follower substantial abilities, wealth, time, and opportunities. Suggests that the talent should be expanded from just wealth into these broader categories, if you like, but that the large amount of money in each of these cases represents substantial abilities and such. And this is how the term talent came to come in English to mean ability, and often substantial ability of some sort. Those who use these things, abilities, wealth, time, and opportunities for Jesus, will be rewarded in proportion to how they use what they have. You see this perhaps more clearly by comparing this parable with the parable of the pounds, where everybody is given the same amount, and the rewards are proportioned to how much multiplication of the original amount has been gotten. Those who don't use them show that they don't really love Jesus or fear him. They apparently are not really saved. Those who use God's gift faithfully will receive more. And this is only hinted at in these passages in the sense of what that might mean, but presumably it means some more spectacular opportunities for ministry in the age to come, though I think it often happens here, even in this life, that when we're faithful in using God's gifts, we receive more opportunities and such. Those who don't use God's gifts faithfully will lose even what they now have. We see that with the fellow who loses the talent. Those who are faithful will, again, traditional translation, enter in the joy of their master, share their master's happiness, is the way the NIV puts it. And I think this means they will share in what he cares about, share the joy of seeing others come to Christ, seeing others grow in holiness. Well, that's a quick tour of this parable. It's an important parable. There's much to be learned by thinking through the details and seeing the nuances there and such, but this is our quick survey of it. My prayer for each one of you is that may we so conduct ourselves that we may one day hear Jesus say to us, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That would be a marvelous thing to have that happen to us, and may it be so with myself and with you.